This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Poirier pulverizes Pettis. Clay Guida gets his first TKO stoppage since Forgetting Sarah Marshall was in theaters. That's 9.5 years. Rafael Assuncao makes his case for a title shot. Conor McGregor goes crazy, gets pulled off of the UFC 219 card that he was never on in the first place. And Oscar De La Hoya wants next. Anderson Silva and Frankie Edgar are out. Jose Aldo and Michael Bisping are in. And we are joined by former UFC lightweight champion Eddie Alvarez and former women's bantamweight title challenger Valentina Shevchenko, one of my favorite people to interview in the sport. All on today's TSN MMA show. Joe, how was your weekend?
Weekend was good. A little bit more relaxing. I haven't had a glory show for a week at least this time. Just preparing. We have two shows coming up. It's going to be tough. They're back-to-back shows. We're going to New York December 1st, and then we're off to Rotterdam for our big pay-per-view, which is going to be good. The UFC runs our pay-per-view. It's Rico Verhoeven and Jamal Big Ben Sadiq. They actually had a press conference today. It got heated. Jamal, who's the contender, knocked Rico out on 6 years ago. And in the press conference today, Big Ben Sadiq spat in Rico's face. So there's a lot of tension and hype. So I'm pumped now.
He's like 6'7", isn't he, Ben
huge.
Sadiq? He's a huge dude.
He's huge. Yeah. He's massive.
I like watching him fight. He's really good.
Oh, yeah. His last fight wasn't too great. He relies on that one-shot power. So he's knocked out Rico 6 years ago, but that's Rico's changed so much till then. But I just see Rico just being too strong, too technical. He's not going to let one shot hit him. You never know, though, with power and that size like that. That's why even these guys, I would love to see them with MMA. I know Rico's fought one MMA fight, but if you put Jamal Ben Sadiq with a 4-ounce MMA glove and you let him crack someone, I think it'll be an easy contender.
Night.
As long as we can, you know, take down defenses. But some of those guys, like certain guys in glory I'd like to see in the UFC, and Big Ben Sadiq would be one of them, man. That punching power with a 4-ounce glove would be murderous.
So is he the last guy to finish Rico?
Yeah, he's lost to Semi Schilt, but I think that was a decision. But the first, would be the last guy to finish Rico.
That'll be fun. That's the one in New York?
No, that's going to be in Rotterdam.
That's in Rotterdam. That's the
in
pay-per-view?
Rotterdam. That's the pay-per-view.
Wow, yeah. I'd like to watch that.
It's good. I know the UFC Fight Pass is going to have the prelims for free. So you get to watch the Super Fight Series, which leads into the pay-per-view. So you get to hear my beautiful voice once again.
Yeah, Sterling Pipes of Joe Valtellini.
That's it.
So this past weekend, card in Virginia, a very good card. I thought it was interesting, especially the cards of the fights at the top of the card and in the main card. So Dustin Poirier beats Anthony Pettis in really a lopsided fight. I mean, Poirier dictated the pace of that fight. He landed, I thought, the better strikes, the stronger strikes, and really controlled Pettis. I will say that second round was potentially the round of the year in mixed martial arts. It was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Pettis was basically blind, and he's throwing up triangles.
I was screaming. I was yelling. Yeah. For me to get excited for fights, because I see so many fights lately, it's really hard, but I was yelling and screaming at the TV, so fights like that are just amazing.
And he was able to lock in triangles, too. You know?
Yeah, like, what did you think of that when the referee stopped it with the blood while he had the triangle in? I know they're complaining.
Well, yeah, he was going for a triangle. I don't mind it so much. Like, when you have that much blood in your eyes, the problem with it is they reset the position and they put him back on his back, and then Poirier knows that triangle's either going to come up or something. You're basically taking away an offensive submission off of Pettis' back from him. But I think Pettis would have probably rather had his vision than have that triangle throwing up a... So I wasn't too upset by it. I understand why people say it didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I thought it made... I mean... He couldn't see. He was blinded, but he could have done it earlier.
But that's what I'm also torn about. If the referee stops it, and then the doctor came in, the doctor took a minute to get the bleeding stopping, get it out of his eyes. Part of me thinks if the doctor had to stop it for the vision, the fight should be over there. Like, I mean, you're letting now Pettis get up, regroup. He was in a terrible position. He was covered in blood.
Couldn't see.
Yeah. And then the refs, they stop it, and then they fix it. They let him see again, and they let him go again. I think a lot of times that should be a TKO call. If the referee has to stop it with too much blood in the eyes, I think it's a TKO victory, in my opinion.
Yeah, with that much of a cut.
And it sucks for the crowd, but, I mean, you got to think of the guy fighting.
Well, it's not like the
ending was any more
gratifying.
Yeah, like if the guy dominating, if I'm in a dominant position, I'm elbowing the crap out of you and your eyes are bleeding and the ref's stopping it, he just saved you. I get the TKO, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was the only really unfortunate thing about that that fight was the stoppage. You know, it was just a freak accident, freak injury. But I thought Poirier was well on his way to a victory there. I think even Anthony Pettis would probably acknowledge that. Although, you know, with Pettis, there's always a shot. He's always able to throw up submissions. But Anthony Pettis' star has really fallen in the last couple of years. You know, he's lost five of his last seven. He's facing top competition.
It's crazy to hear he's 7-6 in the UFC.
Yeah. For sure.
But he's fought a lot of guys, a lot of big names as well. But what you got to think, he keeps coming back because he puts on exciting fights, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the UFC needs. Guys who lay it out there like that, I mean, you can't take anything away from him. It was still a dominant performance.
Yeah.
And I'm friends with Duke Rufus, and I know they're always developing, but Poirier just looked too good.
Yeah, and Pettis didn't look bad. I mean, Pettis was still doing what Pettis does, but Poirier's just looked fantastic.
Yeah, Poirier shut down his kicks. Pettis' best weapons are his kicks.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of his things, and Poirier was to shut it down, control the distance with the good takedowns. He looked incredible.
I like this call-out after the fight. He's like, this isn't what I want. This is what's happening. I'm going to be fighting the winner of Alvarez and Gaethje, and then I'm fighting for the title.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, cool. Well, that's good. That's what you need to do.
He's deserving it. I think he felt he was... He thought he should have had a shot a lot earlier or something like that. I know
he wanted to fight Alvarez again because that fight resulted in a no contest due to an illegal ground strike. And he saw that Alvarez got to be in the Ultimate Fighter, got a marketing push.
Yeah, because that could have been him, right?
Yeah, he's thinking, I was about to win that fight against Alvarez, and now he's getting the push and I'm not. And now he ends up fighting a number 13 ranked Pettis.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think, Gaethje's ranked number 4?
Is he that high? He's up there.
I think
there.
He's high, which is surprising, you know? And I think Poirier
is
only
4. I think Alvarez is 4 and...
Gaethje's 5?
Yeah, and Gaethje's around there in that area code.
Because I think they just moved Poirier up to 7.
Yeah, he's moved up. They kept Pettis at the same. Like, they didn't move Pettis down at all, which to me is weird. Yeah. So he's lost 5 of his last 7.
But I think they're all guys who are above him in the rankings, too, probably.
Yeah, but his only lightweight win in the last, 3 years is Jim Miller, who's coming off of 3 straight losses. You know, like, these rankings need to change. Like, they don't make any sense.
Yeah, it's tough. I think rankings are always...
But someone who I'm friends with that's part of the ranking system sent me a message. His name's Steve Jeffries, a very good... in terms of his coverage of MMA, he does a good job. And he said, if you're going to keep complaining about the rankings, because he's one of the 20 guys that's part of it, why don't you apply to do rankings? And I thought, yeah, maybe I will.
Yeah,
maybe
I think you should. I think you should.
And then I can do a weekly rankings report or something.
I think it's good.
Yeah. And
explain to me, and I know a lot of people listening would want to know, how does the rankings in the UFC actually get to where they are?
So basically there's a panel of 20 different people.
And of the people, they're journalists and
20 different people that cover the sport. But a lot of them are people I've never met, never even heard of.
Yeah.
They're guys from local Hawaiian radio stations and things of that nature. So they're doing rankings on a weekly basis. They rank 1 through 15 for all the divisions that are rankable, which is everything except for women's flyweight and women's featherweight.
Okay.
Women's featherweight. That's Cyborg's division. So they rank it 1 through 15, and then they aggregate it. They take the median of what everybody's ranked, and that's how they do the official rankings.
Okay.
So if they basically add it all up and whatever, they find the median and
the average of whatever it is.
And the average of what all the lists are. Okay. So someone oversees that.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of problems where they could improve. Where do you think they could improve?
Well, I just think that the people that are ranking it are doing a poor job. Yeah. I mean, that's really all there is to it. Maybe they need people within the organization doing it, or they need it to be a secret ballot, because the reason why I don't like it being public ballot is, let's say I do this show, for example, and we like to have Elias Theodorou in here, and one week I don't rank Elias Theodorou. He's going to say, why aren't you ranking me? Why do you think that this guy's better than I am, or should be ranked higher? And that can affect my journalistic relationship
for
with somebody.
Sure.
So I think
does.
A lot of these journalists that, let's say you work in Hawaii and you're not ranking a Hawaiian fighter, and like Brad Tavares or something in the top 15, and you know Brad Tavares, that'll make you uncomfortable.
Oh, for sure.
So why are these rankings, why do they have to be an open ballot? They should be secret ballot. I think they should be secret ballot, although that does take away my ability to chastise certain people who have weird people ranked above other people. But, you know, that being said, I think that... That would be one thing to do, is make it a secret ballot so that people that have relationships in the sport that they don't want to salvage, do want to salvage, can rank people in an open and transparent fashion.
And I know Glory has its own system. They rank based on some formula. Do I know the formula? No. But it's a point system, and Glory has it where If you get a knockout, you get more points, and somehow they rank based on point systems, and you still get so many flaws in that. There's guys where I remember being on broadcast one time, and we're doing a rehearsal, and I'm rehearsing the welterweight division. And all of a sudden, I saw a number two ranked guy, and I just was so shocked. I'm like, how the heck did this guy get here? I had to stop the rehearsal. We had to rehearse because I couldn't believe it. I was just totally so shocked based on this ranking system. So I still think there's so much work. And like you said, I think the problem is knowing people. And, you know, I can be this conspiracy guy where the UFC is going to do whatever they want anyways. I'm sure they have the final say if they want someone higher ranked to sell their cards. Yeah. Who knows?
And the thing about ranking is, you know, all it really does is gives you something to market yourself with. You can say, I'm the number 12 ranked fighter. One other thing you could do is just do top five. Just do top five in the division. I mean, I think there will be a lot less of an argument about someone being, you know, top five. Rather, like, I find that most of the conversation around accuracy is at the bottom of the top 15.
That's a very good
guys
point.
Guys that want to be in very the top 15. To get it. Like, I think if you have a top five, you've got a lot less cards to play with, and you can, you know, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of argument if somebody puts Justin Gaethje in the top five instead of Edson Barbosa, for example. You can say, well, listen, Gaethje, you know, he's undefeated, and you could probably defend it in a better manner. But then when you have top 15, now suddenly there are lots of guys, like James Vick, it just got ranked this week. He's ranked 14th. It's, I think, his first time being ranked. He's 8-1 at lightweight. You know, he's 8-1 in the UFC. Now people look at his quality of opponents as a way of ranking.
Well, you got to look at popularity, too. Popularity probably influences the ranking as well.
Absolutely. And like I said, people that are having transparent ballots, now suddenly people that are friends with them say, why didn't you rank me here? Why aren't you putting me higher? And that's going to cause people to rank people higher than they should. Yeah. And if you look at the Brazilians that are in it, you see a lot of Brazilians like somebody's still ranking Adriano Martins in the top 15 in lightweight. He hasn't had a win in 3 years, but he probably knows Adriano Martins.
Yeah, I like your point of the top five. I think the from 5 to 15 or whatever they rank now, I think what it does is at least it gives fighters to know where they stand and something to work for. If you don't know where you stand, it might not be as motivating for you. I mean, not everybody's going to crack the top 5, so maybe it might be a lifetime goal to hit top 10.
Well, I'm going
to
tell you 5 and 6 in certain divisions, and you tell me if those were, like, are you upset about any of these? So at flyweight, 5 is Formiga, 6 is Wilson Hayes. Could go either way,
okay,
right?
Yeah,
like, you're not going to be upset about one way or another. Lineker 5, Caraway 6 at bantamweight. Yeah, you probably would lean Lineker, but you can make a
case. Caraway's questionable there for me.
Then at featherweight, you've got the Korean Zombie and Ortega are 5-6. I don't know how the Korean Zombie ended up being number 5. Yeah. He's had one fight in 4 years.
Good point.
But then again, you know, a guy like Ortega.
Have we seen enough of Ortega to be top 5?
Yeah, Yair Rodriguez number 7. He lost to Edgar. So, you know,
which he should be higher in my eyes.
Yeah. Lightweight, Gaethje number 5, Nate Diaz number 6. I wouldn't argue that Diaz is top 5 over Gaethje, you know, that's fine. Then you look at welterweight, Maia 5, Masvidal 6. Fair. Maia beat Masvidal.
Yeah,
you can kind of go either way on that. Middleweight, you got Jacare at 5, Weidman at 6. You could swap those back and forth, but you're not going to be upset one way or the other. Light heavyweight, OSP at 5, Hua at 6. I'd make a case OSP probably deserves that number 5 ranking.
I agree.
And I don't think that he'd get voted below.
And I think he's got a fight booked soon, too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he just got announced this weekend in Charlotte against Ilir Latifi, who is ranked number 9. And then at heavyweight, you got Hunt at 5 and Lewis at 6. And, yeah, that could go either way, too.
Yeah.
Women's strawweight, Tisha Torres at 5, Watterson at 6, sure.
Easily.
And then at bantamweight, you've got Rousey at 5 and Zingano at 6. Both have been inactive for the most part.
Yeah.
So, like, if you had a top 5, you're not going to get as much of an argument.
I agree.
And then there are a lot of guys that want to get into those top 15 rankings, but it's a lot tougher to get into a top 5 ranking than top 15.
Yeah.
But that would also mean, like, you're going to see a guy like Vic who's not ranked, and then they go to the number 14 ranked guy and be like, do you want to fight Vic? And be like, no, I want to move up in the rankings. I don't want to fight a guy that's ranked below me. And you'll have a lot less of that if you're only looking at the top 5.
Yeah, but because even for me, I'm just trying to think of my experience. And when I remember being first ranked in the top 10 in the world, and for me, it was just like a huge accomplishment. I was like, holy, like, I mean, to think there's only 10 people in the world that are ranked ahead of me. So for me, I kind of liked being where I was ranked, knowing the top 5, but I think if we're going to do it and it has to be a really solid, I think we got to stick with the top 5 and make an unofficial, you know, 5 to 15 or something.
Yeah, or call these like the journalist rankings.
The journalist rankings over the top official 5. I think the top five, like you said, we can't really argue with who's in the top five.
Yeah, like you can make a little case every now and then, but it's pretty cut and dry who the top five or six people are in each division.
Yeah, and those who are from 5 to 10, I'm sure they're going to be wanting. They're so close to 1 to 5, and that's their goal. I'm looking more of those who may not ever even crack the top 15. Maybe those guys might benefit from having it, a little motivation for them.
Yeah. And then if you're in the top five and you're offered somebody outside of the top five, you should make that public.
Yeah.
Say, this person was just offered this guy. He's not top five. He's not ranked, but he could be considered a top 10 guy in the world, no problem. And they turned it down. And then that could affect the rankings.
Yeah, I agree. Nice.
There we go. Problem solved.
There we go. Done.
Hopefully someone's listening with some sort of clout that can make that work. Let's go back to the card in Norfolk, Virginia. Matt Brown might be his last fight ever, although he's wavering on it now. He's saying maybe it's not my last fight ever. Yeah, it should be Diego Sanchez's last fight ever. Well, I mean, he got KO'd badly.
I would hope so. That's what I was hoping for. I was hoping Sanchez would announce his retirement, but Matt Brown went in, looked good, didn't get hurt, got a knockout. I'm sure he might want to do one more camp, one more payday. I don't see it being a bad thing for him either.
Yeah, well, he looked good, right?
Yeah. So,
but then again, you don't know if they gave him that opponent because they knew he wanted it to be his last fight, and they gave him a winnable opponent.
I'm sure they can do it again. He puts on exciting fights.
Yeah,
why not?
Yeah, I think the more Matt Brown, the merrier. Really,
he's gonna, even if you put him at maybe the main event on a prelims, he'll still sell well. He's going to do better than someone we've never heard of.
Yeah. So well, I mean, Sanchez one is just more, a I'm warrior. Okay. Like, I think Sanchez is one That's of these enough. Guys that needs to be saved from himself.
Yeah, he definitely needs to stop.
I think he's only been finished 5 times in the UFC, and 3 of them are in his last 4 fights.
But even finishes, like, if you finish, you probably got out healthy when you get finished, more than sitting in there and getting your head banged up for 15 minutes. So those wars he's been in where they've been decisions, those are the worst ones. When you get knocked out, you're like, hey, at least I wake up. It's when you get hit. Half of the time you're fighting, you don't even know when you're concussed. You're getting hit, your head's shaking. So I think Diego Sanchez needs to give it up. That's just me.
Yeah, then we saw the rare in the prelims, the Moraes versus Dodson fight. We saw the rare 30-27, 27-30, 30-27.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. That
There've
was
been a couple
just
of those
all
in the
over.
UFC. How did you score that one? I'm curious.
I thought Dodson did pretty well. I don't know. Moraes is good, but I don't think he did that much to steal that 37-20. I thought it would have been a split decision.
Yeah.
It's not a 30-27. Definitely not 30-27 in my eyes.
I didn't think it was 30-27 either side. Like, I thought Moraes won 29-28.
Yeah, I was happy with a split. I just thought because Moraes was coming forward, maybe it gave him the little bit of the edge of aggressiveness and ring cage generalship. But I didn't think it was that. I would have been happy with a split. I would have been happy 29-28 with Moraes as well.
So we did our picks. You picked. You did a parlay of Matt Brown and Angela Hill. Angela Hill unfortunately lost to Nina Ansarov. And I did,
she almost had it, her first round with those low kicks. Yeah. I was like, all right, she's watching the Bazooka Channel with those low kicks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she But she good. Couldn't just finish it, man. Yeah, the girl was good.
Yeah, Nina Ansarov looked very good. That was the best Nina Ansarov we've ever seen, for sure. And I had a parlay of Tatiana Suarez and Carl Roberson. If you would have told me Roberson was going to win by submission, I probably wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, no
but,
way.
He had some submission victories previously, but good for him. And I thought, again, Tatiana Suarez, I think, could be a future champion at strawweight. Her wrestling is
Her wrestling was off the charts. Yeah.
I think she had top control for over 10 of the 15 minutes in
that
fight.
She looked good.
Yeah, and Pereira was undefeated, I think, going into that fight. So
if your bet, what did you get from your parlay?
I got $11.70.
All right, so you're back at 101?
We'll round it up to 12. So, I'm at 92 now because I lost my first two.
So my parlay is dead, I guess.
Yeah, you were at like 100 and something.
Because I hit that TJ Dillashaw one.
Yeah, Dillashaw. Yeah, Dillashaw was like plus 170, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you were at 107.
107.
So
I'm back
now
at
you're down to 97.
97 bucks.
Yeah, 97. And I'm at, what did we just say I was at?
Who knows? In and around there. No, you just won.
I was at 91. Yeah, like $92.
92.
You're still up on me. You're still up on me by $5.
Not bad.
Yeah, we'll make our bets, our fake bets at the end of this podcast. When we preview the card in Sydney, Australia. So that was a fun card. It was nice actually seeing Sage Northcutt look very good. I think.
Yeah, I was going to just say Sage looks good.
He's 21. You know, he's 21. I thought that was a fairly dominant victory for him. He showed that he belongs in the UFC. You know, a lot of people kind of write him off as a gimmick and a guy that gets marketed and pushed. But again, he's 21.
He's 21.
Like, let the kid grow.
And he's also with Alpha Male now, so he's getting a lot of good wrestlers work because he had that karate style background. So, I mean, if you give him now a good, solid team of wrestlers, I think he's going to be vicious. And I know he's even playing Dolph Lundgren's.
He's been offered, apparently.
He's been offered? I was trying to get in on some of the roles they auditioned for it, but I'm a little too short.
Oh, really?
I'm a little too short. I was going to play the son. Dolph's son somewhere. Yeah, and that's the addition. I don't know. They're looking for someone 6'5"-ish.
Oh, well, Sage just looks like Dolph Lundgren.
That's why it works for him, yeah. I guess.
But he's
for
only
me.
Like 5'9".
Sage. But I guess he looks like him. Maybe he's playing Dolph when he was younger, and I'll be playing his kid, hopefully. But I think I'm too short, so they're not even giving me the audition.
Are there other roles?
I don't know. My agent just asked me. She's like, this cool thing popped up. And she's like, I don't think you're going to get it. You're too short. And I'm like,
thanks. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for getting me all hyped up for nothing.
Yeah.
But, what about Clay Guida? You're happy with his performance?
I always love watching Clay Guida. The guy's a savage.
Yeah.
And he got his first TKO stoppage, like I said, since Forgetting Sarah Marshall was in theaters nine and a half years ago. So it's been a while since.
I was happy for him, though.
Yeah, but you know what?
The crowd reaction was amazing. Yeah, that was the best part.
It's great. But you know what? The problem with a guy like him is for the UFC to bring him back and pay him whatever, 90 and 90 or, you know, something that a veteran would get, plus the amount of Reebok money he would get because he's been in the sport for so long, it's a tough sell. So hopefully we see him back in the UFC. He's always been a big UFC guy. He's been a company man. He takes fights. He doesn't complain about anything.
They should take care of him. Yeah, he's put on some good fights.
Yeah. Clay's awesome.
Arlovsky coming back was nice.
Yeah, you know, Arlovsky had lost 5 straight, and he comes back and wins.
He needed it.
Yeah, and he looked good in the fight.
Yeah, he did.
You know what? I never thought that Arlovsky was finished, like as finished as everybody thought he was. And Junior Albini had a big win over Tim Johnson, who's a ranked guy at heavyweight. And now Arlovsky, he's back on the winning track. So maybe he'll have to lose 5 more in a row before they decide to cut him. But he's, you know, it's good to see him back. I've always liked Arlovsky, the pit bull. You know, it's old school.
Are you surprised? Who knows? I'm going to laugh about it. But did you get, this is off topic a little bit, but did you hear that heavyweight tournament for Bellator?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I'm surprised he's not one of those names thinking about it. It would have been the perfect name to be put into that tournament.
That tournament's cool. That's a smart idea.
It is super cool. I like it.
And I like how they have light heavyweights in there competing.
Yeah,
Rory McDonald said he'd be interested in being a reserve.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's talking it up. You get whooped. He's too small. But it's crazy. I mean, we can look at some of the names, but there's light heavyweights and heavyweights. Rampage, Sonnen, Ryan Bader, King Mo. And then you have Mitrione, Frank Mir, which is awesome to see. Fedor and Roy Nelson.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Gonna be fun, you know? Yeah, sign me up. They did the same thing in Strikeforce, and it went and the problem with those Strikeforce is all these guys kept getting injured.
Yeah.
And then Cormier was a reserve, came in and won.
And ended up winning, It'll be interesting. It's gonna play out through the whole year, I guess, so that's what their whole plan. I'm glad they're not doing 2 fights in one night kind of thing.
Not
I
for
hope not.
Heavyweights. You just can't.
We gotta think it used to be like that.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the days.
But nowadays it's unconscionable.
Heavyweight kickboxing, we've had final 16s. Like, yeah, imagine a heavyweight having to go shin to shin 4 times in one night.
I'll pass on that.
Yeah.
I'm not a heavyweight, but I'll pass on that.
There you go.
If I'm representing a heavyweight, we're passing on that. Because that's probably more suited to my role in terms of mixed martial arts, is just representing the heavyweight.
There you go.
I can't make heavyweight.
Be the hype man, Aaron.
We can get you
the hype man.
I'll get my megaphone, my heart jackets.
That's it.
Start yelling from cage side.
I like it.
Referees will get mad at me. It'll be fun.
Why not?
I'll distract them while someone gets hit with a chair. You know, it'll be a good time.
That's it. I like it.
So let's talk about some of these replacements here. The one that obviously blew my mind and is blowing the collective minds of the MMA world is Michael Bisping, filling in for Anderson Silva. Now, before we get to Bisping, Silva unfortunately has another potential doping violation from USADA. It's actually his first with USADA. The last anti-doping violation was with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And it was before the USADA program got put in, but is Silva's legacy tainted at this point now? I mean, to me, Anderson Silva was my favorite fighter when I was, you know, getting into this sport.
All of us.
Just so much fun to watch. Yeah. And you just never knew what he was going to do.
And what he brought outside of the ring is why we liked him, right?
Yeah.
He was nice.
He was a nice guy, honorable,
very personable.
Didn't talk trash.
Yeah.
But does this taint his legacy? Like, do you think people looking back will disclude him from conversations about being the best of all time? Because I think it will.
I think it will, too. I definitely think it will. Should it? Well, the problem is we're looking at the end of his career. We can't
42.
But and the thing is we don't know how he was during his time. And I think that's what the question is. It's not that he got tested positive. A lot of guys do it. They come back clean. But when he was so dominant, testing was different. Yeah. Testing was right after the event, and we always say it, the IQ test. Mm-hmm. But who knows what happened in that time? And that's the question for me.
And were his opponents on something?
That's the other question, too. Like, I mean,
to me,
you can't take it away.
I consider that to be a level playing field. Because
I agree.
If everybody knew that other people were using and they were using, to me, that's kind of fair game.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you know, if people are using and you're caught and they're trying to make it a clean sport, now you've got to put a little asterisk beside people that are getting popped for things. And, you know, people try making excuses and things like that. But it's crazy. In the last year, you can almost eliminate him and Jon Jones from greatest of all time conversations just based on what happened.
I guarantee you more and more are going to keep coming up with this USADA. I just think fighters in the past got away with it. And you've seen so many changes and so many different fighters since USADA came into play. I just think it's a big part of sports in general, and especially in combat sports. Do I think it's fair? No. I mean, I can honestly say here that I won a world title without taking any performance-enhancing drugs. Can it be done? Yes. And I think that's the way the sport should be done. But I do understand there is benefits for, you know, those TRT treatments. I think TRT, if it's with the UFC and they can regulate it, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think TRT could be a positive thing. It can be positive for our emotions. It can be positive for our recovery, our health, our injuries, which help us have better lives outside of the ring. So I think if the UFC can regulate and manage the TRT, it can be healthy for these guys as long as they're managing it and everyone's at the same level. But these guys are taking it at 42, there should be even a time limit. I don't think you should be, if you've been fighting that long and the damage.
25-minute main event.
Yeah, like, I don't know. There's a lot of questions around it, and I hope it doesn't because he's done so many great things in the sport. He was a great role model, but I think it definitely does taint his legacy.
Mm-hmm. I'll always consider him one of the best
all
time. I mean, his run at middleweight was unbelievable. The things he was doing in the cage were... I mean, performance-enhancing drugs won't allow you to have that kind of movement in the cage. That's just pure creativity and
incredible.
Poetry
the way he
motion.
Mixed his stances, the way he used his elbows, his knees, his kicks were on point.
There
good
are still
front
guys
kicks.
That aren't, like, nobody's been able to emulate what he's done since.
Very versatile, and I love to see it. Me being a kickboxer and watching UFC, as someone, you can be the best boxer in the world, but to me, in mixed martial arts and kickboxing, I don't like seeing one. If you're a boxer, learn to use your kicks. Learn to use your knees. Mix them together. I think that's the beauty of mixed martial arts and kickboxing, to be able to kick, to use your boxing, to use your knees, to use your takedowns, be able to play with it. And he just did it so well, and I just loved watching him. So
absolutely.
I hope it doesn't. I hope he still gets looked at as one of the best, but I just don't think it will happen.
So now we've got Michael Bisping filling in for him on very short notice. You're shaking your head. I want to hear your thoughts on it.
I can't, because I'm a big advocate for brain health in combat sports, and to hear something like that just makes me sick. Like, come on. There's no reason why he needs to jump in there, regardless of what the tests are showing. What are the tests going to show? What are they going to show? We know his eye is damaged. He's one shot away from probably going blind in one eye. You can see how much damage he took in that 2 weeks. Usually, after you get knocked out, what happens is you get a medical suspension. You get a
30-day suspension.
And
I don't know why it's not holding up.
Is it because it's a different commission? But it should be universal within the commission.
Usually the commissions will honor it.
You would think so.
I think what probably happened was he got a 30-day medical suspension pending doctor's approval, but...
But what approval can you... What people don't understand is you can get an MRI, you can get a CT scan, and it's just going to show if there's any bleeding in the brain. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take into account all the minor little concussions and all the shaking and all the head trauma he took in that fight. The MRI and the CT wouldn't show anything. So, I mean, okay, you can still speak. Your memory is there. Look, you can... And you know what the psychological tests are and the memory test? They give you three words, ball, cat, and cow, in the beginning of your medical test. 15 minutes later, like, hey, do you remember those three words? Oh, look, your memory is okay. Your brain's good. Go in there and fight. Or can you draw this octagon that's on the shape? Yeah, I can draw damn octagon.
Well, here's the other thing. Who do you think is regulating this event in China? It's probably the UFC.
I have no clue.
I don't know. I think it's a little bit – it raises a lot of questions, I think, when you look at this kind of thing. It's
Like, if he won the fight and he knocked the guy out and he took no damage, sure. You just lost and you got beat up.
And you got choked unconscious.
Yeah, and you took some shots, too.
You got knocked down, yeah.
You got knocked down. You got kicked in the face. You got knocked down with a left hook. You took some shots. You got, I'm pretty sure he was cut. Didn't he get cut as well?
Yeah, and George was hitting with hammer fists.
You took some damage. So, to me, I don't think it's right. I think it's stupid and it's setting a terrible example. Especially when you've come out publicly to say that you have damage to your eyes and you took shots. I'm sorry. You need to recover between fights in order to prevent brain damage. You should have taken some time off, let your brain heal, then have your retirement fight. I think he officially came out to say in March.
Yeah, in London.
His last fight. But take your time. Recover. I know you want another
paycheck.
Maybe you want
that extra payday, yeah.
But still.
$300K or something.
Even if it's $1 million, $10 million, when you're going to retire and you can't remember anything and you're on all these painkillers and you're, you know, you can't remember and you have CTE. I'm like, hey, that's your decision for a payday. Go ahead. But I think it's stupid.
He's not fighting a bottom feeder either. He's fighting Kelvin Gastelum,
a hard-hitting southpaw.
Yeah.
And it's going to be right on
and
his
a good
eye.
Wrestler,
right,
yeah.
right for, you know, Bisping's bad eye.
I wouldn't be shocked, I would be surprised if Bisping's a favorite in this fight. Mm. He'll be an underdog.
What's your take on it? Do you agree with it? I mean, I'm looking at it from a medical health standpoint, but from a promotion standpoint.
At the end of the day, it's his decision. He calls the promotion. If the promotion finds a way to make it happen, they make it happen. And I don't know. It's not my decision. It's not my choice to make. Yeah. And a lot of these fighters, it's their life. Like you said, you personally don't think he should be doing it.
No,
because,
definitely not.
Because no matter what the payday is, the long-term effects will be detrimental.
Absolutely.
But, you know, to me, he's a grown man, and if that's what he wants to do, that's what he's doing. I mean, unfortunately, I think that, as you mentioned, that there could be very serious health ramifications for Michael Bisping. He's been in a lot of fights. He's the all-time wins leader in the UFC.
I just watched it. It was like one of those GIFs. Of him getting knocked out by Dan Henderson.
Yeah.
Not only was he unconscious on the floor, he took another big hammer fist.
Yeah.
And he was out bad. Like, there's no way after that alone, you should be a little bit more responsible with your brain health.
Yeah. I think I'd be, more okay with it if I thought it was an opponent that he had a market advantage over. Yeah. But Gastelum, I think, will be a favorite in that fight.
If you're a fighter who doesn't take a lot of damage, okay. But he's been knocked out in the past. He took a lot of damage. It's not right. It's not smart. I don't think any doctor, I don't know any doctor that I know that would say, this is a great idea, except the UFC doctors. Yeah. You know, I don't know one doctor. And hey, I don't have a medical degree. You don't have one. Maybe you do and you're not telling me. But I just think it's a stupid idea.
Yeah. It's certainly not a great idea.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sure he's had better ones.
Yeah, I think the promotion are probably happy because they lost a really big ticket guy like Anderson Silva, and they needed a big ticket to make that card more interesting. But I don't know at what cost, right? Yeah. Moving on, we'll talk about Frankie Edgar as well, who's out. I believe he has a fractured orbital bone is what MMA Junkie was reporting, but that hasn't been confirmed by his camp.
A lot of people were saying MCL too, but he came out and said, "I wish it was an MCL."
Yeah.
But then I read comments from people that were saying it could be an MCL, but I don't know.
He won a fight with a torn MCL. Like I think it wasn't his last fight, but the fight previously. I remember we interviewed him afterwards, and he was like, "Yeah, I fought through a torn MCL."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Jeez,
yeah,
that's crazy."
Get some injections, and then he goes.
Yeah. So he's out. Unfortunately, it was his big break to try to get that featherweight belt that he's coveted for a long time.
Yeah.
It was going to be the first time he'd fight somebody not named Jose Aldo. and Jose Aldo ends up getting the spot, which I think is the right move. A lot of people thought it should be Cub Swanson, but
nope.
Aldo dominated that division for so many years. He was in a fight camp. It's not like he's taking it on short notice. He was in a fight camp to fight in Winnipeg in December, 2 weeks later.
Yeah,
that's the right move. I thought that Aldo should have gotten an instant rematch to begin with.
He's been one of the most dominant people. He only has two losses in the UFC.
Yeah.
I mean, and you got to look to Conor. He got caught coming in.
I think it's two losses, period.
And his other loss was Holloway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, two top guys. Otherwise, he dominated the division. Conor, he got caught. I think he would have given Conor a lot of problems if he didn't get caught. So, I mean, I would like to see that again as well.
He got caught. It's a legit loss.
Yeah, it's a legit loss. But, I mean, I still think he's better than that. And he is better than that. And then Holloway's tough.
Yeah.
I mean,
I thought won those first two rounds against
Holloway. And he was using boxing more because he has this idea of that wanting to be a professional boxer after, but his best weapon is his low kick. And to beat a movement fighter like Holloway, you need to use your low kicks. And I think he's come out and said that he's going to start using those kicks. His best thing is he's going to use his hands, which are heavy.
Not gonna take him down.
And they're improving. So his boxing's getting better. If you mix some vicious low kicks off of those, that boxing that's improving, I think you got a champion again in Jose Aldo.
And Holloway's legs are pretty thin. He
needs to get back to those low kicks, man. If he gets back to those and he starts doing, you know, starts throwing those relentlessly like we saw in the past, he's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, let's not write Aldo off just yet. I mean, Aldo is one of the greatest of all time.
No, I, for sure, man. I still think he's got a lot left in him.
Probably top five all time. Like, if you were to really look at it objectively, I think, a loss to a really young Max Holloway after you won the first two rounds and a loss to Conor in 13 seconds doesn't make a career. I think a lot of people wanted Swanson to get the shot because they're worried that if Aldo's the champion again, he'll take a long time to pull out of fights. That's kind of Aldo's unfortunate legacy is that he's a guy that pulls out of a lot of fights and takes too much time and complains a lot. But to me, it's like Aldo's one of these guys that I thought... You know, I think the way he fought changed a lot. I think he used to be a guy who really went for finishes back in the WEC and was a lot more exciting. And then he went to become a real tactician. Yeah. So he's almost had two chapters of his career.
And a lot of times that it's a bad thing for fighters. I've seen fighters who've had this raw knockout power where these guys just have the ability to knock people out. They're just so natural, not very technical, but it's a little awkward. And then they'll go to camps that try to make them technical fighters. They start learning, okay, instead of just throwing this big looping left hook and right hands, set it up with jabs, straight punches, use your kicks. And then they start overthinking. And then they start losing that raw aggression that made them so successful. And then they start losing again. I've seen it too many times. So I think Aldo going back to his roots is going to be his best weapon.
Let's talk a little bit about Conor now. Did you see the incident at Bellator?
I did. Apparently there was more that I missed, but I just saw a little clip of it, but it looked ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, he's apologized since. He's posted on Instagram with an apology, as opposed to apologizing to absolutely nobody, which was his line.
Predicting that.
But. Yeah, but he didn't really apologize to Mark Goddard. I thought that his argument that he was trying to get in there because Mark Goddard was standing up a guy who was knocked out is laughable.
He's trying to stand him up to get him to fight again.
Completely laughable.
Yeah.
But, I think Conor, it's good that he apologized.
You call that apology?
Yeah, it's a half apology. Yeah. But the president of the Association of Boxing Commissions, Mike Mazzulli, was on the MMA Hour and also spoke to Stephen Morocco of MMA Junkie and said that the UFC is going to sanction him for it and that he's going to get pulled from UFC 219.
Yeah,
He was never on it.
Yeah.
If we're going to really take a look behind the curtain I think that negotiations weren't going well with Conor, and this gives them an excuse to get out of them now.
For sure.
He buys them some more time.
He doesn't really know what he wants to do, right?
Well, I think he knows what he wants to do, but I think his price tag might be a little bit high.
Or different, and there's a lot of people saying he possibly won't fight until it's Mayweather... It's the McGregor promotion.
Yeah.
So if he says that's the only way he's going to fight, will the UFC bend for that?
Or if he wants an ownership stake in the company.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm the UFC, that's what I do. I give him a small ownership stake in the company. You don't disclose what that stake is.
What it is.
And he fights because he wants to make the company better. He's an owner now. He's part of the, it sets a precedent, sure. But if other people want to say, okay, well, I'm not fighting again until I get a stake at the company will probably be like, okay, cool. Well, you just sold 300,000 pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Have fun sitting out. We'll crown another champion.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I think he's just in a position where he'll do whatever he wants anyways.
Yeah.
So and, we can't really say anything.
We saw that Oscar De La Hoya says he's training because he wants to fight Conor McGregor. Did you see
really?
That?
Really? No, I heard something about it, but that's a real statement.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
What would you rather watch than that boxing match?
I don't know. I like that.
You'd like to see Conor.
I grew up liking Oscar De La Hoya.
Oscar's great.
Yeah,
he was great. How old is Oscar now? 44.
After his coke binges and dressing up like in women's lingerie. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else he's been doing, but it doesn't look like he's been training, anyways. So.
No, definitely not. Definitely not in fight shape.
Yeah, I don't know, but.
I mean, I'd watch it.
Yeah, for sure, I would. I'd love it.
I'd rather see Conor fight in the UFC, but
yeah, let's hope.
I'm not gonna say that I'm vehemently against it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I like being entertained. Sure, I'd like to see how Conor stacks
up
against
the legend. We'd all watch it for sure.
I watched Oscar De La Hoya box against Shaq.
So oh, yeah.
I'll watch Oscar De La Hoya box against Conor McGregor, sure.
For sure, we all would.
Did you watch De La Hoya versus Shaq?
I saw that. They wore headgear and stuff, though. It was like a spine.
Shaq is just gigantic.
Oh, yeah.
It was funny to watch.
It was good to watch.
Can you imagine if Shaq would have KO'd him? Would have been funny.
That would have been good. You would think so, too, with that big hand. Shaq's huge.
Yeah.
Man, he's massive. One of those kicks, if you got that guy to kick, geez, he'd be killing people with those heavy, big legs.
Yeah, but you'd be able to telegraph it, probably.
Yeah, who knows?
unless the bazooka was teaching him some leg kicks.
Oh, yeah, I would like to fight Shaq. That would be a good fight.
Would you? You'd have fun?
Oh, I would love to fight Shaq. I think I would finish him easily with low kicks.
He'd try to
zombie run me, and I would just hit him and run. Hit his leg and run. Okay. Run at him with a sidekick and then just low kick him again.
Well, I know Shaq's an avid listener of the show. So,
yeah.
Shaq, if you're out there, buddy, just send
Let's
us
call
a tweet.
It, buddy. Let's
we'll get it going.
Let's do
Let's
it.
Let's make
Shaq.
Some money.
Yeah. Old school Bronstedt Pride Days. Yeah. Old school Pride Days.
Glory and Bronstedter Promotions present.
There
I got a piece
go.
Of that pie.
That's it. We'll put it on TSN.
Sure.
We got it all. Jay and Dan can get us on the
yeah,
show.
They can commentate.
It'll be fun. Yeah, there
they,
we
they
go.
They can call it. Why not?
That's it.
While we're getting crazy, let's have some fun.
There was other news, too, of talking about people pulling out. Dominic Cruz is out.
Yeah, Dominic Cruz is out. Jimmy Rivera was on the MMA Hour. There's no replacement as of yet. Marlon Moraes called for that fight and had an impassioned plea that he wants that fight. My favorite part about Marlon Moraes' post-fight speech is they had the translator in there. Mm-hmm. He answers the first question in Portuguese. He's like, wait a minute, I speak English.
Yeah, like,
what am I doing? What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Then he speaks
good.
In fluent English, calls him out, no problem.
Yeah, he was good. I knew him... because he fought one of the better Canadian MMA fighters, Josh Hill.
Yeah.
He's fought Josh Hill in World Series of Fighting twice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, great fight. So I'm excited.
Yeah, Marlon Moraes is great. I think that would be a good fight, just having Moraes versus Rivera.
And he looked big, too, eh? He looked solid
yeah,
and big for the
he's
division.
He's a big 35er.
He looked really big and solid compared to Dodson.
Yes. You know what? The bantamweight division now with the Sun Tzu getting that win is interesting because I don't think there's really a surefire number one contender there. You know, if I had to pick one person, I'd say it's Cody Garbrandt, just having that fight get run back.
Yeah.
Because Cruz is injured. He's got a broken arm. Who knows how long he's going to be out for. Otherwise, I would have said probably Cruz is the guy because he beat Dillashaw. I'm interested to see how that division goes. I think that because there's such a lack of challengers, that the Demetrius Johnson fight makes a whole lot of sense now for TJ.
Yeah, that's the fight they want. I know Dwayne Ludwig is really big on that fight. He wants it.
And Ludwig also says he likes the Faber fight. He likes Faber coming out of retirement.
I don't know why.
He says it's an easy payday.
The money fight, he was saying.
It's an easy money fight. Easy money. Yeah, why not? If your guy can get paid, make it look easy.
I hope it's the Demetrius Johnson
Imagine
fight.
Imagine Faber comes out of retirement and wins the title.
Yeah, no. No, thank you. I don't know. They won't let that happen.
I don't think so.
No, but...
But again, there's no surefire challenger.
Yeah.
Like, if there was a time,
like Demetrius,
there was a time to jump
it.
The queue, it's now.
Now it's time for Demetrius Johnson to jump on this fight. TJ Dillashaw will build it up, right? I think TJ could be the guy that can help, Demetrius Johnson get out of that, you know, that little bit of slump everyone's talking about, him not selling tickets. I think this can be a sellable fight, and it'll
for
be
sure.
really good for Johnson to really show himself.
Yeah,
and
the reason he didn't want to fight Dillashaw to begin with is because Dillashaw didn't have a title.
Yeah.
And now Dillashaw's got a
now
title.
Now it makes sense. It's the perfect matchup,
well,
perfect time.
If I'm Demetrius, this is what I say. I say, I'll fight TJ for the flyweight title. If immediately afterwards, win or lose, I get a shot at the bantamweight title.
Yeah.
I either get an immediate rematch for the flyweight title if I lose, or I get to fight for the bantamweight title if I win. And then I get a chance to be a two-division champion, just like TJ did.
Oh, for sure. I agree.
That's what I would do if I'm Demetrius. Because right now, the bantamweight division is stagnant right now.
Yeah, it's not worth a catch weight.
Well, here's another question for you regarding Uriah Faber, if you don't mind me going backwards.
Yeah.
If you're Cody Garbrandt and you hear Uriah Faber say, I'd come out of retirement to fight TJ, isn't that a slap in the face?
A little bit, being like, you couldn't do it, now let me do it kind of thing.
Yeah, instead of being like, listen, my time's done, I've retired, Cody should get the next fight. Cody's our guy, he's our number one guy here at Alpha Male, you know.
He gets a rematch.
He should get the rematch.
But a lot of people don't think he should get the rematch because it was a finish, a second round finish.
I think if you were gonna make Dillashaw's next fight at bantamweight, Cody would be the right fight. I personally, that's what I think, just because I don't see a solid contender.
Unless you see Cody and Rafael Sensal go at it first, and then, well, Dillashaw fights Demetrius Johnson.
Yeah, no, but what I mean is right now. Like, if they said, TJ, we don't want you fighting at featherweight or a flyweight, we want you to fight again at bantamweight.
Yeah.
It's either Demetrius Johnson moving up or you do a Garbrandt rematch, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, Jimmy Rivera has some good wins, but I think Garbrandt at this stage is a more marketable fight.
I think so.
And it's a fine rematch to make. There's still a lot of heat between those two guys. You may as well run that one back.
But does it ruin the...
He knocked him down in the first round.
Wouldn't it be nice to build it up again or... Because, I mean, or the hype's still there?
Who knows? I think it's going to be a moot point anyways. I think that
it's going to happen again.
I think the organization wants Demetrius to get that next shot.
Yeah, so we'll it makes happens. Sense.
Cody's
so.
Also young. You know, the next time Cody fights Dillashaw, the age gap will be pretty significant because Dillashaw will be almost 34, 35.
And I bet you Cody's back wasn't 100% from the recovery.
No,
so maybe
not.
Give him a little bit more time to recover from it.
Yeah.
Do his thing. I knew when I first saw it, and no one really wanted to believe me. Everyone's like, Cody Garbrandt's the hardest hitting guy. He's not. He wasn't. He had a great performance against a Dominic Cruz that was kind of going out. He figured him out. Good power. Dominic Cruz is getting older. His knees can't move like he used to. He's not exploding. He's amazing, talented, and his footwork has made him such a successful fighter for so long because of his movement and being hard to hit. But I need to see more from Garbrandt. I think he needs to develop himself. There's a lot of areas he can improve on. So I just want to see more from him, and I guarantee you in a few years he'll be a dominant champion.
Well, let's not get it twisted. Garbrandt versus Lineker is the fight to make. The fight would just be amazing.
No, for sure.
Make it happen.
I think Garbrandt versus anyone's fun to fight because he's a knockout guy. He goes for it. But it's time for, I think, the guys in the 3 to 5 range to really step up.
Well, Joe, I did speak to Valentina Shevchenko. She is one of my favorite interviews, as I've mentioned to you.
Yeah.
I just love that she's so into everything. She's amazing at dancing, amazing at
target
shooting. Yeah, and now she's also a big fan of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always fun to speak with her. You know, one thing we were kind of talking about off air was whether it's good to have hobbies outside of being a fighter. And Valentina, as I mentioned, has a lot of different hobbies and has become excellent at a lot of different things in life. Do you think that that's something that will help her when it comes to her time away from training?
Absolutely. I think fighters do need to do stuff outside of the sport. You can't sit there and be 24/7 into your fighting. You have to have other hobbies, and it helps you not think of the fight. The most stressful part of the fight is not the training. When you're in training, you feel incredible. You have the adrenaline pumping. You're hitting your maybe you're sharp, you're crisp, you're hitting hard. You had a great sparring day. You can really get that feeling of being dominant is there when you're training. But when you go home, and then all of a sudden that adrenaline wears off and you're tired and you're sitting on your couch and you're like, man, I realize my legs, my body's stiff and this is not happening well. You start playing with your mind. So if you have those hobbies, it takes away those times where you overthink of, man, what if I get knocked out? I'm going to look dumb in front of my family. Everyone's going to be mad at me. I'm not going to make anything. I'm going to be a loser. So you got to block that out, and those hobbies do it. Whether you're reading, whether you watch shows, you got to do something outside of the sport.
And with that, we speak with Valentina Shevchenko, who joins us on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
It's my privilege to be joined now by Valentina Bullet Shevchenko, joining us on the TSN MMA show. How are you today, Valentina?
Feeling great, feeling good. Just finished my training, morning workout, and feeling perfect.
Where are you training right now? I know you like to travel a lot and train at lots of different places.
Yes, right now we are in Las Vegas. Just maybe like few days, 1-2 days ago, we was in Colorado and Omaha, Nebraska. And now I think in a few days, we are thinking travel to Texas.
Wow. Why do you like to travel and train in all of these different places? You're learning from a lot of different people?
It's like it's my lifestyle because since many years, me, my coach Pavel Fedotov, my sister Antonina, we was traveling over the whole world, and now we have opportunity to see different states of United States, and it's amazing, really amazing. Not only because of like different nature, different some kind of different nature, but also to have opportunity to train with different people, to meet different different people who has the same mentality than we are, and just to it's really amazing when you can like meet different from all places people thinking the same as you.
Have you been using the UFC Performance Institute while in Las Vegas?
Oh yes. We was training there for 3 or 4 weeks, and it's an amazing place. I really enjoy to train. Great facility and physical therapy to restore all like body of athletes after the fight. So they have everything that athlete need.
I've been there before. You know, the one thing that I really want from there is the pod chair that you can nap inside of. I like that.
It's one of things also like perfect.
So your sister is with you. Is she making her UFC return soon?
She will fight in MMA, but a different promotion.
Sorry, I meant MMA, not the UFC. That's correct.
Yes, she will fight in the Phoenix Fighting Championship this 22 of December. But she's also a Lion Fight Muay Thai champion, and she planning to defend her Muay Thai Lion Fight belt in maybe beginning of the next year.
That's great. You know, I imagine the UFC is probably going to be interested in her down the line once they see how good she is.
Yeah, she was fighting like many years ago in Muay Thai, and every time we was fighting in Muay Thai and MMA, and her like more fights in MMA she did in 2003, 2002, 2005, but then like me, we was more focusing on Muay Thai career, and now she returning, and she already had one fight in September in MMA, and now she will have her another MMA fight in December, end of December.
Well, let's get down to the latest Valentina Shevchenko news. Now, the UFC is launching a flyweight division. The Ultimate Fighter 26 will determine the eventual champion. Paige VanZant tweets out she wants to face the winner of that Ultimate Fighter show. You say she has to go through you first. They offer her the fight, and she declines. Is that all correct?
Everything correct, yes. And I think if you are if you have power to say that I will fight for the belt next, you have to prove for the people, you have to show for everyone that you deserve it. You cannot just jump there and say, okay, here I am, I want title. No, you have to deserve it. You have to fight for it. And when you are close to the title, fight for the title, you will receive it. But not because of you are saying or just something like this.
You know, I see the difference between good fighters and great fighters. And I look at the show, The Ultimate Fighter 26, and there's a lot of good fighters on that show. But you're a great fighter. I mean, you are at the absolute top of women's MMA. You're still the number one contender at bantamweight. Are you worried that nobody's going to want to face you at flyweight?
It's never like this. Even the greatest fighters, they have to be worried every time, because good fighters, great fighters, it doesn't matter. In the octagon, it's all the same. It's all matter about your performance, how you train, how you prepare for the fight, and all it's because of this. And I know that in reality, it's a lot of very good, good character fighters and very strong girls, and it will be amazing. I'm very glad that UFC opened this new flyweight division, because now a lot of girls have opportunity to fight in their own weight category, not had to suffer in the cut weight or jump on one weight class over.
Now let's go back to Paige for a second. As you mentioned, she tweets out that she wants the title shot, or that she's getting the title shot. You know, she's obviously very marketable. She's been on Dancing with the Stars. She has a lot of big sponsorships. When you saw that tweet, did you think that she was going to get the title shot?
Actually, I was thinking, interesting, but it not looks like you will receive it. But if some, any person say with 100% sure that she or he will receive the title fight, it's because of something, but looks like she was just tweeting this for making some interest for her.
Yeah, it looks like she might have jumped the gun on that one.
Looks like yes.
And she would have had to face the bullet. You jump the gun, you have to face the bullet. Is that right?
No, it's exactly, yes, I totally agree. If you say something, you have to respond for your words. It's not only just because you will speak whatever you want. No, you have to respond it. If you want to fight for the title, you have fight with the top fighters. This is it.
So she says she won't fight you. You're training. I mean, you're always training. You're always keeping yourself fresh. What is next for you in your mind?
Next, I was planning to come back to the octagon in the beginning of the year, and I think yes, my manager now speak with UFC. They looking for opponent, and I'm totally feeling ready to come back, and I will help to prepare my sister to fight in her fight in December. So I will be totally ready for beginning of the year to come back.
Do you think flyweight's going to be your new home for now?
I hope so, because how I said, like, even in bantamweight division, I feel very comfortable to fight. But for flyweight, I feel it's more like my own weight category, and I'm sure that I will be able to show more like techniques, more skills, because I will fight with the same size girl like me, and I, for example, in 135, sometimes I'm very worry about the size, the height, the everything, these details. But doesn't matter what, I feel in good fighting same like in 135, and now I'm very happy to start my fighter career in 125.
Well, you mentioned bantamweight and fighting bigger opponents. You lost to Amanda Nunes at UFC 215. It was a very close fight. You said you still had unfinished business with her. Is she still on your radar? You know, does the thought of you being the first woman to potentially be a two-division champion appeal to you down the road? Obviously, you know, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves with the flyweight division, but is that something that is part of the grand plan?
Of course, yes. And how I say, we have unfinished business with Amanda, and I cannot leave the things like this. And I know exactly that that fight, last fight, she didn't want it. She didn't win this fight. And now I'm planning to do like good things in 125. I will put all my power to make like good things there. And of course, I will be back and speak with Amanda again.
Dana White, I spoke to him a couple weeks ago at UFC 217. He said he has big plans for Amanda Nunes in December. Have you heard anything? You know, is there a potential fight with her and Cyborg that you've heard anything about?
No, I didn't hear nothing. Didn't hear nothing about her, because I was totally like out of any fights, any news, because we was traveling and I was like using all my free time to enjoy for the travels and restore all my energy, because this preparation for a last fight, it was very long preparation. It was preparation two times for UFC 213 to UFC 215. So I had to spend like at least 1 month out of anything.
Yeah, I understand, of course. I mean, Amanda Nunes is a tough, very tough opponent. Do you think that she would be able to compete with Cyborg in a fight at 145 pounds?
It will be interesting. Each fight is very interesting. And, of course, it's one of the possibility to see good fight between them. But who knows? I don't think that she will accept. No, I don't think so.
You said you haven't been keeping up on news much, but I was wondering, on Friday there was an incident with Conor McGregor. He jumped into the cage at a Bellator event. Did you get a chance to see that? And if so, what did you think about it?
Why he jumped there?
Well, his teammate was fighting. His teammate won the fight, and he wanted to congratulate his teammate. But the referee said that the fight hadn't been finished yet, so to speak. So the commission's upset with him. The UFC's apparently upset with him. And I was wondering if you'd seen it and had any thoughts on it.
Yes, exactly. I saw this like part when he jumped there, and he has some like between them and referee, something like this. But I didn't know that the referee said that the fight is not finished yet. So I think these things can happen, and sometimes it's like misunderstanding between fighters, referee, and everyone. So I don't know. Sometimes happen things like this.
Now, you must be very proud, because you typically train in Denver, you know, a lot of the year. Your occasional training partner, Rose Namajunas, she beats Joanna Jędrzejczyk at UFC 217. You know, you've beaten Joanna under Muay Thai rules in the past. Did you give Rose any tips that helped her beat Joanna?
You know, I'm very happy for Rose, because she was training very hard for it. And we spent like three training camps together with her. Last training camps we spent like me, Antonina, my sister, and she. So it's like all this work, it's very helpful like for all of us, not only for me, not only for her, not for everyone. And, you know, from the first moment when UFC announced that Joanna will face off to Rose, I knew that Rose will win this fight, because I feel the power of Joanna and I feel the power of Rose. And I knew exactly, even many people, like they said, no, Valentina, no, how it's possible, no, it cannot be, no, Rose cannot be Joanna. I said, let's see. And the result, it was like we was. And so all this because Rose now it's not like a fighter like 3 years ago, 2 years ago. She grew up a lot, and she is really, I think she will be very good champion for strawweight division.
Yeah, people do underrate how important it is to watch the growth of fighters. I mean, she's still very young. She's improving every single week that she's training, every single month. You know, younger fighters tend to improve at a more rapid rate. I was one of the people that also thought Rose had a good shot of winning against Joanna. I just didn't think it was going to be like that. I thought it would be, you know, Rose would get tricky, get some submissions in there, find her way to Joanna's back, but ended up beating her on the feet, and that was very unexpected in my eyes. I'm guessing you thought otherwise from training with Rose.
Exactly, exactly. It was not something I expected for me at all, because I think I know that Joanna was very confident that every girl they want to go to the wrestle with her, to put her down, trying to submit, and she just was not expected this kind of this role. She has very good stand-up, and she can box, she can fight with her legs the same good like doing on the ground. So this is, I think, it was more unexpected things for Joanna. And Rose, she didn't feel like any trouble fighting in the distance, on the ground, in the clinch, near the cage. So she was just doing what she was preparing all this time. She was just fighting and taking the belt.
Now, Joanna had a great winning streak going. Ronda Rousey has the record for the most defenses in women's MMA history. You know, Amanda Nunes has won 6 in a row, and she's won a lot of them in the first round. Nobody seems to want to fight Chris Cyborg. If you had to pick the best or most decorated women's mixed martial artist ever, who do you think it would be? Yourself excluded. I know that you probably think that based on your talent, you're probably the best. But in terms of the best of all time, who would you say it would be if you had to pick somebody?
You know, I cannot pick no one, because not only about me, it's because all of these girls, it could be my possible like opponent for the future fight. So that's why I will not just pick, because I focus on not to pick someone like good one. I focus on beat them. That's why for me, it's not the right time to choose no one.
Well, you mentioned they could all possibly be opponents. One of the women I mentioned is Ronda Rousey. Do you think that she will come back to the UFC?
We never know. Sometimes people take like different decision. We could see the fight George St. Pierre. He came back after years of like not fighting. So whatever can happen, and I think she might come back. Sometimes she will feel she will miss this like competition, and she will decide to come back. So let's see. Like we will train the same as hard as we do, and we'll see how it's turning out for the future fights.
Yeah, I think if Ronda were to come back, a fight with Misha Tate, then Misha, you know, she says she hasn't ruled out coming out of retirement if she was going to fight Ronda Rousey, would be a very interesting fight. But do you think that the Ronda code has kind of been broken? You know, people know how to beat Ronda Rousey now?
No, I don't think so. It's people things happen every time, and of course it's sometimes you have different opponents, but also Misha Tate, she is not Amanda Nunes, and she will not do the same tactics that she did on the fight with Ronda Rousey. So each fighter has different style, different tactic for the fight, and even you know how to beat someone, doesn't mean that you can do it. It doesn't mean it at all. And that's why I don't think that she's broken. She just, like, want to rest. She just want to enjoy her time. And when she will feel like she's ready to come back, she will come back.
How's the cooking going? Last time we spoke, I mentioned you're great at shooting guns, you're great at fighting, you're great at dancing, and you said you wanted to become really good at cooking. Have you been working on that?
It's not about become like good and cooking, because we are cooking. Me and my sister, every time we are like preparing different foods, and I very like and very enjoy to cook. And from every country, we try to like learn some recipes, and then to invite our friends in different parts of the world. For example, our Peru, our country, then where we was living for 8 years, we choose like three the best plates of seafood. It's ceviche, chupe de pescado, and chicharrón de mariscos. And everywhere we go, we are preparing for our friends this kind of fish. And of course, Russian food, Kyrgyzstan food, all kinds of plates that we like and enjoy every time we prepare it.
That's awesome. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you have time to get so good at all of these different things.
I try.
Children. I know that's why I don't have the time.
I just try to receive the good energy from everything that I do.
Before we wrap up, I wanted to get your view on one of these on an interesting story. The last opponent you beat, Juliana Pena, she's expecting a child. She says that if you would have beaten Amanda Nunes, she wanted to name her daughter Valentina because she loves that name. What do you think about that?
Now I think I should win this fight, and I will be very like honored that her baby will name by me, by the same name like me, and I would love to be it like happen, but it's not, and I hope she will pick very beautiful name same, and I want to congratulate her and to wish her a lot of happiness and health for her and her baby.
You know, a lot of people say that you shouldn't let it go to the judges. The judges shouldn't have to determine the outcome of fights. This time, the judges determine the outcome of the baby's name, which I think is weird.
Can you repeat, please?
The judges determined whether she would name her child Valentina. She had to sit and wait for the judges to read out to find out what her baby's name was going to be. I thought that was weird.
It was weird. Yes, a little bit. It's happened sometimes.
All right, Valentina, well, we wish you nothing but the best in your future. You know, obviously losing by decision twice to Amanda Nunes is a tough pill to swallow, but we know that you have a very bright future ahead of you, especially at flyweight. It's your optimal weight class, and we're excited to see what's next for the Bullet.
Exactly. Thank you very much. But I know exactly that last fight she didn't win. And as soon as I will feel that this is right time to come back and finish our unfinished business, I will do it. Now I'm focused very hard on 125 light flyweight division. But this is my life. Martial arts for me is everything, and I love this my lifestyle. And I will fight as much as I can. And just every time to try and to show the best part of me. Thank you very much for calls. Thank you very much for having me today. And just have a great day today.
There's Valentina Bullet Shevchenko. Always fun talking to Shevchenko. She's, again, one of my favorite people to interview in the sport. I find her just such a fascinating personality. I did want to talk to you about what she said about Paige VanZant. You know, Paige VanZant says, I'm next in line for the flyweight title. That's the fight that's going to be made. The UFC denies it. Shevchenko calls out VanZant. They offer her the Shevchenko fight. VanZant says no.
Yeah.
And, of course, Shevchenko says, then what? You know, what are you? You can't. The way that I put it in the interview is she jumped the gun and now she has to face the Bullet.
Yeah, there
but
you go.
She won't face the Bullet.
Yeah, that's probably a good choice for Paige VanZant.
Yeah, but this is the problem. Even if you win that title for the Ultimate Fighter, like, you're going to have to face Shevchenko. That's a problem.
That's a problem for anyone.
If you've been watching the season of the Ultimate Fighter, you know, these girls are talented. I don't want to take anything away from them. But, you know, as I said to Valentina, there are very good fighters and there are great fighters. And I think Valentina's a great fighter and that the fighters on the show are good fighters.
Oh, yeah. She's just incredible. She's good. She's tough. I think any girl who's going to fight her, but Paige VanZant, it's not a great fight for her. Not a good fight for her.
Yeah, like Shevchenko at 125, she could be the champion for a long time. It could be a situation like with the strawweight title where Esparza won it on the show, then Joanna beat Esparza in her first title defense.
Yeah, and then that's
just
it.
Held the title until Rose recently beat her.
Until Thug Rose came out. But yeah, who knows? I just think Shevchenko will dominate that.
I think so, too. I don't see who could be any...
Who can beat her?
Who can be competition for her at 125? Yeah. Like, who at 135 is going to move down to 125, right? That would pose a threat. I can't think of anybody.
Yeah, I agree. So, but good for her, though.
That's it. I don't see anybody at 35 that poses a threat to Shevchenko other than Nunes. But other than maybe Holm. But they fought. I mean, and that rematch could pose a problem for Shevchenko or Holm. That's a good matchup. But,
yeah, and even around, it was around this time last year, too, that Holm beat Rousey. That was the big...
Yeah, it was back in...
I think it
was... Oh, not Holm. That Nunes beat Rousey. Oh, no, but Holm beat Rousey.
No, it was Holm beat Rousey. I think about almost...
it was probably a year and a half ago. Okay. Yeah, I think it was like February of 2016. I can't remember, though. I know that December 2016 is when Nunes beat Rousey.
Okay. I thought it was home beating Rousey around this time.
I'm so bad with my dates.
I'm remember. Terrible too. Yeah. I'm just saying because I was reading it off of this online stuff, and it mm-hmm. popped up. So I could be messing up the names. Who knows?
Yeah. But I know for a fact that Nunes beat Rousey in December of last year because okay. that was the last time Rousey fought.
Could be wrong. Your date's probably better than mine.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I was on the Jay and Dan podcast and. Dan was like, I know that Tate beat Holm on this date. And I was like, no, that was UFC 200. But it wasn't. He was right, and I was wrong.
Okay.
So I'm the guy who's covering MMA, and Dan O'Toole knows more than I do. I think that Shevchenko, I just don't see who poses a threat to her at that weight class. And I think that is the right career path for her. Try to win the 125 belt. Sets you up for potential super fights with Nunes, with Joanna.
I agree. Dominate that division.
Yeah.
Dominate it. I mean, there's no rush. She's already fought, two times for the title. So go back, reestablish, and dominate a division. That's all yours. It's for her. It's for her to dominate.
Yeah, and the subject of Ronda Rousey came up, and she mentioned that she thinks Rousey could get that competitive flame again and come back. And I said, do you think that the code to beat Ronda Rousey has been solved? And she said, no, I don't think so. I think Rousey, at her best, is still really difficult to beat.
Absolutely.
But it seemed like the really talented strikers were the ones that were going
to
give.
Yeah, as soon as she learns how to, maybe improve her striking or maybe develop her wrestling to kind of slow strikers down, she's going to be vicious.
Yeah, and we talked about Rousey versus Tate, because Tate has said she would come out of retirement to fight Rousey, and I think that would be the fight to make. If you're going to bring Rousey back, that's the fight you make,
yeah.
Rousey versus Tate.
Yeah, you don't want to put Rousey back in with a big name and then her lose and then have the potential of, leaving the sport for so long again. I agree with that. Tate would be a good fight for her to have again.
I want to check if Tate is still in the testing pool. I'm going to look that up. But
because you have to be officially retired, right, to get off of the testing.
To get out of the testing pool, yeah.
If then, you're then just
you
unofficially.
Then you need, I think, 6 months or something to come back, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
You need to be, you have to be tested, I think, for 6 months, unless you get an exemption of some sort. But she was saying that, Tate could try to do what Nunes did to Rousey, but that doesn't necessarily mean she can do what Nunes did to Rousey.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm liking these women's fights, though. They're building in hype, which is I like to see. And I remember you'd always see women's fights like, oh, why is this women's fights on the card? And they weren't building themselves. But now the storylines are coming out for the women. It's just making it that much more exciting. And I hope, that some of the women's fights, and people always say it, bring the best, most exciting fights. And I think with the storylines behind them, we can see some real big, more superstars in the women's divisions.
Yeah, I think there has to be. I think they need to sign more women, too. It's just there's just not a whole lot of them. If you look at who's ranked in the bottom of that top 15 for the bantamweight and the strawweight division, there are a lot of people that aren't that high caliber of a fighter.
And even the countdown shows, remember, the countdown shows are always about the main fights on the card, so we really don't get to know these female fighters. I'm sure I'd love to know more about them and their training and just get more women involved into the sport, right? So, get them on countdown shows. You might not be the main 2-3 fights for the countdown show, but it might be nice to highlight some of these women and see what they bring to the sport.
And it's really the only sport where men and women are on a level playing field, where you see women on the cards with the men, and it's marketed the same
way. They're putting them on the pay-per-view spots as well.
Main event of UFC 200.
Yeah.
Right?
So, it's getting there. They're understanding how valuable these women fights are. They just need a little bit more promo would be good for the women.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been shocked if they gave Paige VanZant the title fight for at flyweight.
Yeah.
Because, you're talking about I think the winner of that show will be on a similar level of competition as Paige.
But Paige's last fight was a loss to Rose, right?
Yes. Or was it a win? Yeah, I think it was a loss to Rose.
Yeah, because she hasn't really been too active. Or she maybe won one after Rose.
Yeah, I can't remember, to be honest. I think she might have won her most recent fight. I'd have to look it up. Because I forget things, just like I guess you do too.
I'm terrible.
Yeah. So let's go to the other side of the world. Australia, the card's on Sunday in Australia, on Saturday night at the normal time here in Canada. It'll be on TSN for the main card. The prelims are available on Fight Pass, and the preliminary card is available on the Fight Network. If you're stateside, obviously Fox Sports 1 for both the main card and the prelims. Main event, Fabricio Werdum versus Marcin Tybura. And then from there, there's a whole lot of other fights that don't have a whole lot of ramifications.
Yeah, that I don't know much about.
Tybura's a very good fighter. I think that's an interesting fight. It's a contrasting styles. I think you got more of a striking-based fighter against Werdum, who's also a very good striker, but you know, has more success when it comes to the ground, as he exhibited against Walt Harris back at UFC 216.
Which you see an improving stand-up from Werdum always, but I see that fight submission, man. I think Werdum's going to get him down in the first two rounds and just, I'm going to go with rear naked choke finish for him. I think he's just talented, but you've seen him get caught, and Tybura does have the potential to put him out, so, but I still think that's a minus 346 favorite for Werdum is a good call.
The weird thing is the odds on this are larger than Werdum was against Walt Harris. And I think that Tybura is much better than Walt Harris.
Yeah, exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see. I think Tybura does pose a threat, but I do obviously think Werdum is the superior fighter. And I think Werdum is one of the best heavyweights of all time. So that kind of goes without saying. Other fights that are interesting are Guy Elias Theodoru on the card against Dan Kelly, two veterans of the Ultimate Fighter smashes. It'll be interesting to see how Dan Kelly looks coming off of a pretty bad loss to Derek Brunson, and Elias off of a pretty close loss to Brad Tavares.
Yeah. I think Elias's awkward style is going to give him a lot of problems, but again, Dan Kelly has more of that. Is it that the judo? Is it a judo background that he has?
Olympic judo background.
Yeah, so I think that's going to pose, but Elias makes it really hard for you to grab him. He moves. He likes to stay long. He likes to use his kicks. So if you're, you know, Daniel Kelly, you're trying to look to grab those kicks, trying to keep Elias against the cage, which isn't going to be an easy task. And Elias is a pretty big favorite here, too.
Yep. Two other fights that I think are really interesting are Will Brooks and Nick Lentz, very similar fighters. And then you've got Tim Means and Bilal Muhammad. I always love watching Tim Means fights. Tim Means is a killer. An interesting debut. Two actually interesting debuts on the Fight Pass card. You got Nadia Kassam, who's undefeated, 4-0, 21 years old. And you've got Tai Tuivasa, who is a debuting fighter and the brother-in-law of a guy whose name I'm forgetting right now because I'm having a brain fart.
Okay.
But he's a UFC fighter and fought in Edmonton, and I interviewed him. And for some reason, I can't remember his name. So I'm going to look it up right now as I fill some time.
I just think there's a lot of names we don't know. And I'm going to say it a million times as I'm filling the time here, but these cards are the ones that actually end up doing well. And I think if we can see these guys really put it out there, you know, who knows? But I'm excited mostly to see Elias. I just think what impresses me about him is with the amount of experience he has, what he actually has done in this sport. He's actually really new. And he's not like he's this big experienced fighter, but he wins. He finds ways to win, and
crafty.
He's gritty, and he's crafty. And I mean, I've always hoped, I mean, if he's listening to this or not, he would develop some of his kicking with us at Bazooka, because I think I can really improve his kicking game to be a little bit more effective than we've seen in his past UFC fights. But regardless, man, I hope he continues to do well and shows that you don't necessarily need that years of old school martial arts experience to get where you are. And he's had a great career, so... Yeah, I'm excited.
So far, so good. He's probably, outside of GSP, one of if not the best Canadian in the UFC.
Yeah, he's doing really well.
Tai Tuivasa is the brother-in-law of Tyson Pedro. Okay. So I apologize to Tyson because he was such a nice guy when I met him. He kept complimenting my ties.
Yeah, that's
the way to my heart.
There you go. You're not wearing one today, though.
No, I'm not today. Maybe next time.
Next time.
I don't dress up that much for the show, Joe.
Yeah, I thought you did just for me all the time. No,
yeah.
I guess
well,
not.
I'm wearing dress nicely, you know.
Yeah, it's nice.
There's no
better
tie.
Than me.
It's not totally formal.
Better than
you're a t-shirt guy.
Yeah, I'm always a t-shirt
If I could be
guy.
A t-shirt guy, first of all, I hate wearing socks. If I could never wear socks, I would never wear socks. Yeah, I just hate. I
like sandals or just?
I would just wear shoes with no socks.
And your feet sweat too much.
Yeah, I know. My wife throws my shoes out all the time because they stink.
Yeah.
But it doesn't bother me. Why don't we make
bothers
our picks?
Everybody else.
It probably
maybe
bothers
not you.
Everybody else. Why don't we make our picks?
All right, let's do it.
You want to go ahead?
All right. I had a tough one on this because, again, I don't know a lot of these newer fighters on the card. But from the ones that I knew and what they are going to threat, I'm going to do a parlay this week. I'm going to go Werdum, and I'm going to go Tim Means. Looking at his record, he's fought bigger names. He's fought Neil Magny, Lima. He has a loss to Matt Brown. John Howard. So just based on experience and that little bit of awkward style, I'm going Tim Means and Fabricio Werdum.
That's like a little bit below even money, but yeah. So,
yeah. Not much, but a lot of these favorites, I don't know any underdog that can pose a threat. So I have to be a little bit safer this week.
I'm going to go with Nadia Kassam at minus 147. It's her debut. I don't know too much about her, I'll be honest. I just don't think that Alex Chambers has much left in the gas tank. She hasn't fought in 2 years. It's two Australian women going toe-to-toe. Kassam is 21 years old, 4-0, and I just think that again, it's more of a bet against Chambers than it is a bet on Kassim. So we'll see how that goes. This is a true dartboard pick. So
okay.
If you're going to,
try bet to, some money on
yeah,
it?
Yeah, if you're going to bet, I wouldn't recommend it. But I just think that's betting against Alex Chambers is kind of a safe play at this point in time. The other guy I was looking at was Tuivasa, but Rashad Coulter looked pretty good against Chase Sherman. That was a real slugfest, and I haven't seen much from Tuivasa either. I just know that he's been finishing guys left and right, no problem. So I'm going to go with Kassim.
All right. Let me ask you, if when I'm watching this on the weekend, which fight should I watch out for minus the main event? Based on your expertise, what give me a fight that I should really keep an eye on?
I'll go Tim Means, Bilal Muhammad. I think that, it's hard to not have an exciting Tim Means fight. But if you want to look at prospects, I like the Coulter-Tuivasa fight. It's the first fight on the card. Younger heavyweights that are coming up. I always like seeing younger heavyweights fight because it's such an old division.
And Tuivasa, as you said, is the young 21-year-old with the experience?
Tuivasa's 24.
24?
And he's Australian, and he's just been finishing guys left and right in his fights before coming to the UFC. And Coulter's pretty young, too.
Okay.
He trains in Houston. In Houston? Is it Houston or Dallas? He trains in Dallas, Rashad Coulter. And just an interesting fighter. I think he's one to watch. As well. So, and Eric Shelton's a good prospect too at flyweight. He's a good fighter. And then Kassim, I think, is worth just seeing what she's got. She's 4-0, young, 21. And then, of course, there's Will Brooks, who I think we need to keep an eye on because of him being the champion in Bellator. Is he going to turn it around? He's had a very rough start to his UFC career.
Who was his UFC last loss to?
Charles Oliveira.
Okay, that's
in
right.
In Buffalo this
that's
year.
That's right.
Yeah, it was a bad one for him. He got choked. Badly. You don't want to get if you're losing to Charles Oliveira by choke, you're getting choked out badly. He's got one
and
of the best
it's cool too because there's not many Bellator fighters who come to the UFC, and it's usually the other way around, right?
Yeah. Here's the track record of Bellator champions that have come. You've seen Will Brooks has come and he's struggled. Eddie Alvarez came, won the championship.
That's right, but it took forever to get him.
Yeah, there were problems. Then Hector Lombard. Very disappointing in his UFC career.
Yeah, but
coming from Bellator.
But there's not many more than that.
Yeah,
I mean,
really.
I always thought, like, when a lot of young fighters ask me, like, oh, I would love to go to Bellator, then to the UFC, and I'm always hesitant for them to go that way. So I'm always like, hey, maybe the better option is hold off on Bellator, make a way through the Ultimate Fighter houses or getting on a local car. But it's tough because a lot of fighters would love to have that Bellator opportunity, big stage, good events, and then transition to the UFC. But I'm sure with the way Bellator works, they don't want you to go. It would be against their model, right?
I don't know. Don't be shocked if their former heavyweight champion, Vitaly Minnikov, ends up in the UFC. I think we could be seeing him in the UFC cage in 2018.
Well, I hope so.
But he makes good money overseas fighting, so we'll see how
you got to think Bellator. I mean, even Rampage Jackson, before he entered this and re-signed with Bellator, apparently he was in talks with the UFC as well.
Yeah, well, he was technically under contract to the UFC.
Because he has to fight. He has one fight left or something,
yeah,
right?
Like there was that weird kind of thing with Bellator where he left Bellator, signed with the UFC. Bellator kind of went to court. So, but I guess they gave him his release, and he's now back in Bellator for a while, which is good for Rampage. I guess that's just about it before we get to our next guest. I do want to say that I think Hakeem Dawodu is going to be on the show next week. Great fighter from Western Canada, undefeated, just signed with the UFC. A lot of people think he's the top Canadian prospect in the sport. I'm very interested to see who he's going to be matched up against in his debut.
I mean, I've heard of his name a lot because he was a very successful Muay Thai kickboxer. I think I want to say he was from Mike Miles, which is one of the bigger teams out in out west for kickboxing and Muay Thai. Had a very successful, and he's just been killing people with MMA. And I think this kid has that. Why I'm excited is because it's bringing that kickboxing Muay Thai to MMA, and I think he's a good representative to show how dominant kickboxing can be in MMA. And I hope he really keeps true to that style. And again, work his ground game because that's what everyone's going to try to do is to take him down. So keep that ground defense, but stay true to that kickboxing Muay Thai.
Well, he's going to Jackson Winklejohn.
Okay, cool.
To start his UFC career. So
very
good for
cool.
him. That's a big camp. Yeah. And I think that he's been lobbying to get signed by the UFC for some time, and now he's got to deliver. So we'll talk to him hopefully next week on the show. But first, we'll talk to the last man to hold the lightweight title in the UFC before Conor McGregor. And, of course, we've got the interim champion, Tony Ferguson. That man is Eddie Alvarez. He's one of the coaches on The Ultimate Fighter Season 26, which is ongoing right now and airs Wednesdays on TSN. So without further ado, here is Eddie Alvarez.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
privileged to be joined right now on the TSN MMA show by Eddie Alvarez. He's one of the coaches of The Ultimate Fighter, a new world champion, the 26th season of The Ultimate Fighter. It airs Wednesdays at 10 o'clock Eastern on TSN2 up here in Canada, and of course on Fox Sports 1 in America, if you're listening stateside. And of course, the two coaches will face off at UFC 218 in Detroit on December the 2nd. The prelims for that event also available on TSN. Eddie, how are you?
I'm excellent, man. Joint training, getting ready for December 2nd in Detroit, getting ready to face off with Justin Gaethje, and just diving into training.
Knowing what Justin brings to the table and how he fights and how he has fought historically, is this like preparing for a war?
100%. I mean, he usually predicts the paces of the fight, you know what I mean? And he takes the fight and makes it a little bit ugly. And it's where I usually strive in a fight. I don't start winning until it gets nice and ugly. So it kind of plays into my favor, I believe. I think the uglier it gets, the better off I'll be.
That's kind of your trademark, is once the water gets deeper, you start to float a little bit higher.
That's my thing, man. I usually thrive in them situations. In the past, it's when it's still a tense and the guy's being super technical, guys have better chances against me. But once we get into the thick of things and it becomes a fist fight and it becomes, a little bit reckless, I kind of thrive there. I enjoy being in that sort of moment.
And you kind of know what Justin's going through. You've been there before. You know, you were the big dog in another organization. You signed with the UFC, made your way to the title, whereas, you were a champion in the UFC. Do you think that having that experience of coming in from another organization gives you a bit of a leg up over Justin?
I think experience is a double-edged sword in this game, because it's one thing to have experience and have it work for you because you've dealt with a lot of things, but it could be a double-edged sword because you experience so much, you tend to overthink things. And I've been caught in the moments in my career where my experience played against me. So I think at the end of the day, the guy who wins is the guy who does the most and sacrifices the most for that individual fight.
Let's get into The Ultimate Fighter a little bit. Obviously, you were coaching for the first time. You're married. You have four kids. Were they in town during the taping?
Yeah. So we were on our way to a cruise. I had a bail on the cruise and head out to the filming. And when my wife and kids got off the cruise, they met me right in Las Vegas as soon as they got off.
So your wife went without you and managed four kids on a cruise.
Yeah, pretty nuts, right?
Yeah, I thought you were the tough one in the family. That's pretty hardcore.
I got a good one, bro.
That's pretty wild. So they were around for a couple weeks during the filming of the show.
Yeah, they were able to get there the last 2 weeks or so, and we had a big old house there with a pool and arcade and stuff like that. So it was cool for the kids just to. We're voyagers as a family. We tend to travel a lot. We like traveling and experience new things. So the kids were, kids had a great time out there.
That's great. Must be a lot of fun for them. And, I saw on your Instagram account that your boys just moved up a rank with Ricardo Almeida Jiu-Jitsu. That's incredible news.
Yeah, man. They're in the game. I did my best to keep them away from it. But they're in the game. And, they're really enjoying it. So, it's in them. They're in Alvarez and they're going to have the bug. So I wouldn't doubt that, they want to fight and they want to do all that. I'm trying to push them towards soccer and other things, but
can't keep them away.
It is what it is.
Once they smell those mats, they want to stay there.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I'm a father of two boys myself. So, I know what it's like to relish in all of their successes.
Yeah, man.
So on the Ultimate Fighter, a lot of the show often revolves around beef between two of the coaches, but this season took a strange turn. It was highlighted by some of the issues that you had with Lauren Murphy, who was on your team. Have you spoken to her at all since the show's wrapped?
Nah. We stopped speaking midway through the show, I believe. somewhere midway through the show.
So while you guys were still filming, you and her had a big disconnect and there was no communication.
Yeah. I mean, look, I say all the time, I even tell my kids, you know, a good fighter is a good listener. You know what I mean? If you listen well, you'll end up being good at whatever you're doing if you're a good listener. But if you go come in with an attitude, like a know-it-all attitude, like you've been there, you've done that, and you know all things, then you're probably not going to do as well. You're a little bit closed-minded, and you have like an attitude like you think you're a little bit better than what you are. And then, you know, that's what we're dealing with. And, you know, every show there's 8 girls, so everybody has different attitude and the way they go about things. But it seemed like, you know, she had a little bit of a chip and, you know, she had to deal with that.
Do you think it was just a little bit of a cultural differences between camps? You know, she's at the MMA lab. You're out training with Mark Henry. But, you know, maybe you just thought that or the way that you train is that rest isn't, you know, as valuable as she has, as she thinks it is. She was talking always about how Team Gaethje always had as much rest as they wanted to have, but you weren't really a big fan of that.
Well, no, that was hardly my issue. That's the thing. Like, the thing that was brought up in the media, this sticking point was, oh, I didn't get a day off after my fight, and I'm a jerk because I wouldn't give her a day off. That wasn't my issue with Lauren Murphy. Like, that was the smallest thing that I dealt with her. The biggest issue with her was she kept conspiring from day, like once we got our team together and we picked the 8 girls, she immediately begun conspiring against the girls on our team. So like, there's a conflict of interest. Lauren Murphy only cares about Lauren Murphy, but me, it's Team Alvarez. I have to take care of 8 girls and try to win this tournament as Team Alvarez. So, you know, instead of worrying about one fight at a time and the person she had to fight, which was on Team Gaethje, she was conspiring against people that she felt threatened by, like Sarge and Barb Honchik and girls that were directly on our team. So I just there was a couple times during the show I had to slow her down and be like, look, I understand you're worried about what could happen, but let's just focus on the girl that's in front of you who's on Team Gaethje. Let's conspire against her first. And then as you move along the tournament, we can go down that path, you know. But she just conspired against everyone on our team from day one, and that was my biggest issue with her. The day off, I don't mind a day off. I would have liked a day off when I was out there, to be honest with you.
Well, it is. I guess that was shown a little bit earlier in the season. It was you and her were looking at the bracket, and she said, "Oh, I've got if I win this and Barb wins, I'm going to be facing Barb. How am I going to game plan for that?" But I mean, the coach that you had surround yourself with, you know, you had Marlon Moraes there, and he's, you know, and Zabit was down there. You know, like a bunch of these guys are incredible fighters as well. I guess, you know, she wanted to get a bit of a head start, so to speak.
Yeah, she was thinking that too far ahead, you know what I mean? And in fight and in life, period, that's the wrong way to approach things. Like, fights are volatile, man. You don't even know if your opponent's going to show up. You don't know if you're going to snap your ankle that day at that practice. You don't know if Barb is going to tear her rib. Tournaments are so volatile, anything could happen. So to be anything but present and in the moment is a little silly. So, like, for her to start conspiring about something that could happen, I was just trying to bring her back to reality and make her present. Like, look, tournaments are like this. You have one person at a time. Let's keep our focus. Let's stay present and focus on the one person we have, and then we can move on. So... you know, it was just a little bit of a head case.
So when she didn't come to practice, I guess the thing that annoyed you about it is that it seemed like it was sour grapes because she did look ahead a little bit too far and then, I guess, got a bit of a reality check and wasn't there to support her teammates.
You know, it was about her, you know what I mean? And we still needed to keep the morale and the spirit of the team up because, you know, in my eyes, somebody from our team is going to be champion. You know, and what they didn't show is, like, she retired immediately in the locker room. Like, mm-hmm. She lost. she went back in the locker room and kind of made like a retirement speech. I'm like, you're that's not what fighters do. You're not a fighter when you do that. You're a quitter. Like, you lost and then you quit fighting for good. So, oh, I can't take this no more. She kind of, I don't know if the camera showed that, but she retired in front of everyone. I'm like, geez, man, like I'm trying to keep them around in the spirit of the team up. I know you're a little bit upset, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Like, you're quitting fighting because you lost one fight.
Yeah, I guess she is sticking with it, so that didn't stick, right?
Yeah, as far as you know. Again, putting the cart before the horse and like kind of, you know, jumping to conclusions about things that'll never happen.
So has the show been appointment television for you? Do you sit down with your family and watch every week?
I do. I do my best to try to make the shows. To be honest with you, it's on 10 at night, and a lot of our practices are early in the morning. Sometimes as I'm about to get in, I fall asleep. But I always DVR, and I'm watching every week.
You know, the reason I ask is in the last episode I watched was the one with Rachel Ostovich, and when she got on the scale, you made a bit of a face, and I said, in my head, I'm like, I hope Eddie's not watching this with his wife and his kids.
No, I actually didn't see that one yet, but no, I remember when that girl weighed in, I turned to Justin, I'm like, what is this? Like, is this a like Victoria's Secret thing, or is this a fight going on? Because, you know, it's TV, you know what I mean? It's entertainment, so I get it, but it was a bit much for a way.
I was like, oh, man, I hope Eddie's not sitting next to his wife while they're watching this. I don't want her to get the wrong idea.
No, what's funny is everybody on my team, like Marlon, Anderson, we're all married, you know what I mean? We're all married men.
That's why I bring it up,
and we almost all did the same thing when that went on. All of us like looked away.
But like, they didn't show that on camera.
Didn't want to get in trouble. For like, the hell with this, man. It was a funny moment.
So obviously this season crowns a new flyweight champion in the women's division, the first ever women's flyweight champion of the UFC. So the rumor has it that Valentina Shevchenko is planning on moving down to 125. Do you think that there are girls on this season that can hang with someone of that caliber? I mean, Shevchenko is world class.
I do, man. I do. And I know, you know, without giving anything to show away, I've seen serious talent in that room the 5-6 weeks I was there. And there's no limit to the girls that are going to fight in the finals and the girls who even the girls in the semifinals. So there's about four girls total. Who I feel like, you know, they're tops. They can be a champion and stay a champion and fight the best girls in the world.
I'm eager to see how it plays out. It's been a fun season so far. A lot of finishes, which has been exciting for the viewer. You know, fighters often say they don't look at the rankings, but I know that that's probably not true. I looked at the rankings, and they looked strange to me because you're ranked behind both Khabib and Edson, but you were the champion at this time last year. You haven't lost since dropping the title. Khabib hasn't fought since that event, and no disrespect to Edson, he's your teammate, but his last win during that time is against the 12th-ranked guy. So, you know, why is there no love for Eddie Alvarez in those rankings?
I think a lot of, you know, how the rankings are shuffled are who the UFC wants to fight for the belt next. So they're going to shuffle that accordingly to who they're trying to push next to the belt. So regardless of, you know, what you feel you deserve or what you feel you don't deserve, they're just trying to get the next title contender closer up them rankings. So, you know, it's subjective. Everybody can argue them. That's what's fun about them. But the rankings I don't care so much about until it comes to contract negotiation, you know?
And that's what matters most?
Otherwise, what do they mean? If you're not the champion, then what does it mean if you're 1 through 10? If you're not trying to negotiate a contract or something like that, then the rankings hardly mean a thing.
Now, I need to ask you about this guy because I don't know how he does it. His name is Mark Henry. He's your coach. He runs a restaurant called Pino's Pizza in Woodbridge and spends time, you know, still manages to find the time to train yourself, Edson, Frankie Edgar, Rashad Evans, Zabit, Marlon Moraes. How does he do this? How does he manage to run two businesses at once for the most part and still train some of the absolute top fighters in the world?
Mark Henry's absolutely obsessed with fighting. He's an absolute maniac when it comes to fighting. He has more energy and he's more driven toward the sport of MMA than any fighter in the room. He wakes up at 6 in the morning. He goes for a run. He trains Edson. So he'll hold pads for Edson. He'll head to sparring. He'll film sparring. He'll go to the pizza shop and work his day at the pizza shop. He gets to his house at 4, trains Frankie. I come in at 5:30, he trains me, and then he'll go for a small run and eat dinner and do it all over again the next day. Like that's Mark Henry, and that's how he functions. He functions at a high level, and his passion toward MMA, it's hard not to, you know, catch that bug when you're around him. So he just has a ton of energy, and I think the energy comes from his love for the sport and for his guys, you know, for me, for Frank, for Edson, Marlon, for all of us.
How much passion does he have towards the pizza industry?
Look, to be honest with you, he's the type of guy, he's a goddamn winner. No matter what he does, he wins at. So, like, this is not a normal pizza shop. When you say, oh, the guy runs a pizza shop, he runs the best damn pizza shop you could ever think of. If you eat a slice of his pizza, you're going to say it's the best slice of pizza I ever had. The way he runs his business, it's probably one of the most organized and best ways a pizza shop can be ran. Like, he only deals with the best, and he only deals with winners. That's Mark Henry.
I got to try this pizza. That sounds unbelievable. It's just unbelievable to me that he can do all of this. He's a Superman.
Look, I say anything when love is a powerful thing. It gives you all the energy in the world. And I feel like, you know what I mean? He loves what he does.
And
he loves being a part of this team. He loves coaching us to championships and seeing us change our lives, our wives, our kids. He truly loves it. So it gives him all the energy in the world to keep up with these crazy days he puts in.
I mentioned Rashad Evans earlier. So Rashad basically went from living in a mansion in Florida to wanting to find his fight roots and moving in with Frankie Edgar's. Was it his father-in-law, something along those lines, to try to get his love of fighting back? I'm hearing there's still no plans of retirement for Rashad. He's still out there training with you guys?
Yeah, he came out to help Corey get ready for his fight. So he came out and, you know, Corey helped Rashad get ready for his last one. So he wanted to come back out and, you know, one hand washes the other, so he wanted to make sure he was there for Corey before Corey got ready.
I can't thank you enough for your time, Eddie. As I mentioned, yourself and Justin Gaethje are the coaches on The Ultimate Fighter. Season 26, a new world champion, is going to crown a new women's flyweight champion, the first ever women's flyweight champion in the UFC. And then, of course, in Detroit, December the 2nd, you will be facing off against Justin on a very stacked card. The prelims for that event are going to be on TSN. Of course, The Ultimate Fighter also on TSN. Thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Please, guys, tune in. This is much more exciting than any lightweight title fight that's going on these days. This will be the winner of this fight will be crowned UFC's most violent.
It's like the people's champion.
UFC's most violent.
All right, Eddie. Thanks so much for your time.
See you, brother.
There's Eddie Alvarez. Fantastic interview. Nice guy. Enjoyed speaking with him. Trains with Mark Henry out in New Jersey, one of the most tireless working coaches. Yep. He runs a pizzeria on the side, which is unbelievable. Can you imagine just coaching all these killers and then running a pizzeria? It's pretty fantastic.
That's good. I like that. I like guys who do more outside of the sport than just the sport, so good.
Your cousins run my favorite pizzeria.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. LaManna Bakery.
LaManna Bakery. Love LaManna Bakery.
Yeah, How can you not?
For LaManna Bakery.
There you go. How can you not? They've been so supportive. Every time we have events and stuff, they've been just donate foods and cakes, and it's just amazing.
Oh, if they want to donate some to the Bronstetter family,
that's it. Why not? Feel free. We should go for lunch
their
there.
Their pizza is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
They make
everything's
amazing.
They
make great
pie. Oh, everything's amazing there. But yeah. Eddie Alvarez, man, I'm excited. He's one of these few guys that I want to say that I've liked to follow. I'm not really huge fans of a lot of people, but he was one of these guys that I'm excited to see. I was a fan of his when he was fighting elsewhere, so I hope he continues to do well.
Yeah, sometimes you can't say that a fight is can't miss, but Gaethje versus Alvarez is as close to a can't miss fight.
Oh, it's gonna be crazy.
Yeah,
it's gonna be nuts. I just hope Gaethje just understands that maybe defense is, an option once in a while, and I think it's just gonna be a good banger back and forth striking. So who knows? Maybe Alvarez will use some of his takedowns and some damage there.
Yeah,
could happen.
UFC 211 and UFC 218 are like the people's cards. So we had 211. 211 was Stipe versus Junior Dos Santos, Joanna versus Andrade, Maya versus Masvidal, Edgar versus Yair Rodriguez, and David Branch versus Jotko main card with Alvarez and Poirier on the card, as well as Jason Knight and Chaz Skelly. So that's like a people's card. And the reason they call it a people's card is it's not super marketable, but if you're a fan of the sport, you're going to want to watch
for
it.
For sure.
And now you've got UFC 218. You got Holloway versus Aldo 2. Overeem versus Ngannou.
Nuts.
Cejudo versus Pettis, which is going to be fantastic.
Crazy.
In flyweight.
Yep.
Alvarez versus Gaethje. Torres versus Watterson, which is a very competitive strawweight fight.
Amazing fight.
Yeah, and then you've also got Tamer versus Dracar Closes, I think is a fantastic fight. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan's on the card. Another guy that's always fun to watch and delivers. Alex Oliveira versus Yancy Medeiros. Like that's a great card.
Oh, for sure. I agree. It's the people's card. And if they put more of those, that's what, like, I mean, this is where you get a fight card like Australia where you're not too overly excited, but they make up for them with fight cards like that.
Absolutely. Well, we'll wrap up the show. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully next week we speak to Hakeem Dawodu. Hopefully you can join me for that.
Yeah, hopefully.
You can talk on the kickboxing perspective.
I would like to.
Always happy to do the show with you, Joe, and we look forward to next week. We'll see what happens in Sydney. We'll preview a card in China. If you thought there were people on this card you haven't heard of, Joe, wait till you see that UFC Shanghai card. Maybe we'll just talk about the main event next week. We'll see how that goes. So until then, thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.